Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the all-new Opel Crossland. Beauty isn't scared of life.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Daffodil Day takes place this Friday, the 26th of March, and the money raised provides for services for people with cancer, easing life a little bit for them during what is a very tough time. And this morning I'm joined by one woman who, already having battled so much in life, is now battling cancer. Helen Flynn, good morning.
Good morning to you, Claire.
Helen, thank you very much for joining us. Will you take us back? I want to start your story last year, before you were diagnosed. Now, life was good. You'd had a tough couple of years prior to what happened, but you were in a fairly good place. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. It was back in October 28 that I was diagnosed with HER2 triple positive breast cancer. And it was diagnosed at grade 3, which is quite an aggressively growing stage. And ironically, in life, we had went through quite a few years of various traumas. And we had just come to this turning point where life was getting good and okay. We could plan ahead and look forward.
Well, just to explain to people, you have two boys, Oisin and Tom Oge, and they're both have autism.
That's right.
And you had been in a women's refuge with the boys. Then you were in emergency accommodation and you just secured a place to live, where you could call home when the diagnosis arrived.
Absolutely. The thing is, I'm a lone parent to two neurodiverse little boys, ages 8 and 10. And I'm a full-time carer to these children because of their complex needs. So you can appreciate, number one, a carer does not get sick. And if a carer gets sick, like, who's there to mind the carer? And, you know, the ship takes in water fairly lively when the head of the household gets sick. So when I say I'm a lone parent, I mean it in its most truest literal sense as well. Because, yes, I was raised in an orphanage down in the beautiful town of Killarney, raised by the Mercy Nuns. And so when I say I don't have family support, I really mean it, you know. Mm. And I knew, unfortunately, I knew the dangers of this cancer. My own mother actually passed away back in January 2019. So I knew that this cancer does take mothers, loved mothers, wanted mothers, fantastic mothers, you know. So it was a very real threat and fear when this bombshell hit our household.
And you noticed, Helen, a change in how you were feeling and a change in your
personally.
In your breast. Was it last year, last March?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, hindsight is a great thing, but 12 months prior to the diagnosis, I would have been very aware of the chronic fatigue and the loss of appetite and denseness in the breast. But of course, I was kind of struggling through so much environmental stress factors, you know, being in transient accommodation under the care of Cope Galway was a highly stressful trauma to kind of endure. And so I put it down to the hardships that we were suffering in life. But now with hindsight, I do recognize them being absolute symptoms of breast cancer. So I did. I presented to my GP, God bless her, and I presented with a dense area of a mass of denseness in my breast, my right breast. And it was her, actually, that straight away pointed out a lump north of my nipple, which, to my absolute embarrassment, I hadn't actually noticed before. And at age 44, I kind of recognised that I had actually been even examining my breast incorrectly for cancer all these years. So thank goodness my GP made an immediate referral, and it was to receive a mammogram and an ultrasound and a biopsy. And it was fairly evident. I knew my own heart and soul anyway that I was going to receive this cancer diagnosis.
Mm-hmm. And what was the diagnosis, or is the diagnosis?
It's a HER2 triple positive is what they call it. So it kind of represents 20% of breast cancer diagnoses. So it involves a 12-month treatment plan. So what I have, where I'm at now with it, my chemotherapy would have began last November, 18th November, and I'll be finished my treatment next Christmas, good heavens. So I'm over the big, big, big rounds of chemo, as I call them, the most dramatic rounds as such. And now I'm just meeting my breast surgeon this week, and we'll get a date for surgery. And then it's radiotherapy, and it's a year of Herceptin. It's an infusion you receive every 3 weeks.
And how have you managed and coped with the chemo?
Good heavens. Myself and chemo weren't friends at all. And right from the get-go, I'm afraid. But I'm incredibly grateful. My tumours had a fantastic response to chemo, as in there was shrinkage noticeable from round one. Myself, my own journey with chemo, I was incapacitated and in a wheelchair for 13 weeks. So it was no laughing matter in any way at all. And the thing is, I had to reach out to Tulsa and seek a foster family, because I knew for me to access chemotherapy, my children would need support. So thank goodness, after initial rejection, we did secure support from Tulsa and a wonderful foster family who take the children on the eve that I go into chemotherapy, because my chemotherapy was from 7:40 a.m. to 6:15, you know, 10 hours in there. And that never reduced because I had so much adverse reaction to chemo. They had to feed it into me very slowly because of all the different allergic reactions and whatnot.
So explain to me how that works then. The boys go the night before, is that right? And then when do they come back?
It depends. My treatment plan changed quite a lot because obviously when you receive chemo on day one, it's a kind of scientific model. And then they have to gauge how is the patient taking it. And for me, I had so many bad reactions. They had to adjust and amend. So, for example, at the beginning, it was every 21 days. And then it became every week that I received the chemotherapy because my body couldn't process the higher dosage. So mm-hmm. we had to phase it out a bit. So, to be honest, the foster family just had to be very, very flexible, you know, because it was shifting goalposts the whole time. So there was long stays, you know, during Christmas. There was a block of 12 days because I was actually rendered completely incapacitated, where I couldn't actually wriggle my toes or lift my arms. So this was obviously a crisis. You know, this was a bad situation. And then, thank goodness, as they started to change my chemotherapy, the children were only going for 1 and 2 nights maximum. Mm-hmm. So that was fantastic both ways, because then the separation anxiety didn't kick in and it was a healthier thing all round.
Gosh, just really tough listening to that, how that regime is for you, Helen. And then the local community, you had great support.
Unbelievable. Like, you have to appreciate that we were blow-ins here, good heavens, you know, when we secured the tenancy. So Donishka is out at the east side of Galway City. And, for example, after my first round of chemotherapy, I lost movement in my arms and legs for eight days. Now, nobody predicted that. That wasn't written down as a side effect. So this came as a shock to everybody. But the school that both children are in, an ASD placement in the local school, Merlin Woods Primary School, which has state-of-the-art facilities and their teachers are just phenomenal. But when this crisis hit our door and we were only 2 months in that school, the principal, Paula, God bless, sent over a teacher to this house every morning to pick those children up from my house and to walk them over to the national school, can you imagine? And she also took the food, you know, the sandwiches, because I was in this capacitated state where I couldn't lift a knife in order to butter the children's sandwiches for their lunches. So they took over that role. Now, you wouldn't find that in a private funded school, good heavens, as such. You know, a fee-paying school, as in the intervention from the school has been phenomenal and has made all the difference to our lives. Mm-hmm. And then the local resource centre, the Ord Family Community Centre, they actually sent one of their members of staff, Angie, over to pick the children up from school every evening and bring them over to my house. Because I was so incapacitated, I couldn't actually walk up the stairs anymore. I just could only be on the couch.
And how do the boys understand what your diagnosis is and what you're going through?
Yes, I'll tell you, I had no choice but to be absolutely transparent with these children from the get-go because of our circumstance. You know, there isn't a husband, there isn't an aunt, an uncle, a grandparent to shield and absorb, you know, to soften it for them as such. And initially, when I received the diagnosis, I couldn't possibly process what it meant to me as a mother, because my only concern was the children. How is this going to affect them mentally? How is this going to affect us logistically, even getting to the chemotherapy sessions? So they were my absolute priority. And COVID, you know, has kind of inadvertently stopped an awful lot of wraparound services that would normally be available for people going through cancer. So, for example, normally there would be a six-week play therapy program rolled out to help children understand the cancer diagnosis in the family. So this was suspended. So I had to be open and frank. And how we started was, first thing to go was, I was very proud of my hair. Beautiful brown hair that had never had a grey head in my head, and no hair dye in it, and immaculate. So the first thing we decided was that we would donate my hair to the Little Princess Trust. So that was really important, because this trust uses your hair to make wigs for children who receive a cancer diagnosis.
Mm-hmm. So it was so important. Your own children were part of that decision then?
Absolutely, absolutely. The process is you have your hair in a ponytail and you cut the ponytail, and that's what's given into the bag and sent off. And then you're left, you know, with an inch of hair. And we had a bit of a skit. So my friend cut a mohawk into my hair, and the three of us posed. You can imagine now, these two children are the most genteel, innocent, beautiful beings you could come across. So we actually posed giving cancer the middle finger, and that became my profile photo for Facebook, where I just have friends on Facebook, good heavens, you know.
And listen, I want to talk to you about Daffodil Day, which is an aid of the Irish Cancer Society, and that's another organisation which has given you and is giving you great help, isn't it?
Absolutely, my goodness. I would have linked in initially with the Irish Cancer Society, and they referred me on to the Volunteer Driver Programme. And I have to tell you about this programme. So basically, you can imagine, I was in there for my rounds of chemotherapy 10 hours a day. So I'm leaving the house very early, and you're coming home. You know, this was all during the winter months. It was all black, you know. So they would pick me up from my house in the morning, and a volunteer would, and drive me to the hospital, and then collect me later that evening when I gave them a little phone call to say I'm on my way out. And I'll tell you, it's not just the lift to the hospital and the logistics of that, if you have me. It's also that these volunteers respect your privacy, that sometimes you're in a quiet mood and you're sitting in the back of the car with your mask on and you're processing, you know, the day ahead, or me having to say goodbye to the children the evening before, or, you know, and I'll tell you how that was really highlighted, because the day I received my diagnosis, I was very stoic and pragmatic when my breast surgeon told me, you have cancer. And I was very, you know, organized and matter of fact about the whole thing, until I came out of breast check. And the air hit me and the emotion kicked in. Then I had compartmentalized it while with my surgeon, because I had information to take in and I needed to be together. So I came out and I flagged the taxi and I sat into the back seat and I was sobbing away into my mask. And this taxi man was utterly indifferent to me processing the fact that my whole world was crashing about me and I was trying to pick up the pieces and process it all. So he was having this one-sided conversation, you know, giving out about the PUP payment and the government and Donald Trump and whatnot, you know. And here I was in the back seat, really, with, you know, with this seismic, devastating news to process. So that's the intervention with the volunteer.
A volunteer who understands what you're going through and can make a judgment based on how you're feeling on the day. And of course, the 100%. Irish Cancer Society can't do their usual fundraising on the streets because of the pandemic, Helen. But people can go to cancer.ie and buy all sorts of bits and bobs, including the daffodils, to support them, can't they?
100%. And even, you know, my local school, good heavens, you know, they would have bought a box of daffodil badges, and they're just selling them there in the staff room. And the same with the local cafe. It's very easy to do. I even bought a little daffodil teddy bear, good heavens, for my youngest. there's so many ways to support the Irish Cancer Society.
Okay, well, and they're all available at cancer.ie is where you'll find all of those items to purchase to support the Cancer Society. And Helen, I want to thank you very much for talking to us. We wish you well with your continuing journey and your treatment. And I know you're speaking to your surgeon this week, so I hope that that goes well. And thank you very much for joining us today. The Irish Cancer Society support line to speak to a cancer nurse. That number is 1-800-200-700. That's 1-800-200-700. We'll take a quick break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.